Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The most supreme adaptations are purchased at the cost of inessentials. Our hosts already carry structures for sight, sound, smell, locomotion. It'd be quite redundant to carry those capacities ourselves. So we travel light. No quaint fins, stalks, feathers. It's terminating in hooks, or suckers, or little digits. We've no use for any of it, for we have transcended. Have I amused you, Doctor?
You are truly self-deluded.
You're stalling for time. It's already too late.
You really don't see it, do you?
See what?
You're jealous.
Absurd.
You have no senses of your own. You have to steal them from others.
We have inhabited men for millennia. We have caused great nations to fall. We've shaped...
You've stolen everything you ever had. You are nothing but a thief and murderer, a parasite. You're pathetic. You're nothing but cancer with a big mouth.
I will know every thought in your head in just a few moments. All your memories, your senses, your fear, your suffering.
Happy heresy, then. Yes, Birdie Num Num. We still live in a world where men have nipples. And a happy Friday the 13th. And you know, this is the perfect day to discuss the Shadow, Archons, and Wetiko on this day where the Knight Templars were betrayed. And people still assume it's bad luck. And Sophia is in the 13th Aeon still waiting for Jesus to rescue her. My name is Miguel Connor, and I am your Pompidus of Gnosis. I hope you're writing your own gospel and living your own myth. I hope you're running with those searching for the truth and avoiding those who have found it. We are raging against heaven and storming the gates of hell for our misplaced childhoods and paradises lost. And yes, for those of you who may ever wonder, Misplaced Childhoods actually comes from an album by an obscure band called Marillion, sort of a Scottish version of Genesis in the 80s. But the guy Fish, lead singer, wrote some excellent lyrics, and this concept album, Misplaced Childhood, the ending, the big reveal is that no, you never misplace your childhood, you just misplace your direction. And that's what we're doing here at Aeon Byte. We're finding our direction, our metanoia, the turning about towards higher realms and where we belong. So, before I get too carried away, I am very excited today to be joined by Colin Davis, who will be tackling these very important subjects and will tell us these Gnostic Bond villains, even though we find the enemy and the enemy is often us. Colin, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Hi, Miguel, and hi, Vance. It's great to be with you guys. And been following you both for a long time, and it's fantastic. It's great to talk to you.
Pleasure's all ours. Yes, and we got the Moondog Vance. Vance, how are you doing on this Friday the 13th?
I'm fine. Even though I'm not as young as I used to be, I still really am. So,
yes, Jung is definitely the topic today, as it has been recently on Aeon Byte. So,
great.
But it's so important more than ever. And unfortunately, once we get Yeah, Jung is very popular. People talk about shadow work and projected archetypes, but when it comes to really putting down the work, we still have a long way to go. I can tell because shows where I actually give techniques on how to, you know, heal and become whole always get a lot less views than shows on just like conspiracy and all that. And I'm like, no, we're past that. This is great. Information's awesome. We got to do the work or the pain that's coming. It's going to be 1,000 times worse, but that's people out there. Some people, when you're ready, you're ready. So,
yeah.
Yeah. We want to make it a conspiracy that people are trying to stop people from healing and doing the work.
There you go. Oh,
yeah. You're right. What you say about that when it, it's all fun and games until it gets to actually doing the work, until it comes to actually rescinding your shadow, as Jung said. That's where the rubber hits the road, and that's where total self-responsibility comes in. And it's difficult for all of us, and we all can only see through our own subjective mind-body movie of life. And so we need help from other people to reflect us. And if we can find other people out there that are doing the work and taking it very seriously, well, then hopefully that can inspire us to do it ourselves.
Indeed. Well said. Well, let's start with you, Colin. Tell us a little bit about how you came to be a heretic. How did you come out of the shadow world into some sort of authenticity, as they say?
It's in my family, I think, because my parents were, I was born in 1969, and my parents were aspiring actors at the University of Texas. And so they were kind of intellectual hippies, and they were experimenting with LSD and reading Carlos Castaneda and probably Carl Jung and listening to Ram Dass and Krishnamurti and all that kind of stuff. So that was in the air when I was, that was on the bookshelf, and that's what I probably heard my mom and dad talking about and all of that. So I'd say I was kind of born into kind of an outsider position. And then, I'm a musician. I'm an artist. There's artists mainly on my mother's side, all these jazz musicians. But I started listening to heavy metal music in my early teens and was always kind of an outsider in school. And so I think I kind of, I just came in with the outsider archetype, right? Running already. And so but then when it comes to how did I get, well, why am I looking at the shadow and evil and the dark side of consciousness and all of that? Because there's a lot of people who are outsiders and they're into esoteric subjects, but they're not looking at evil. And it's, how can you say, why somebody is attracted to this or that? But it's such a foundational and archetypal philosophical subject of the ages. And it's always this conundrum. And it's always, every time you try to embrace it, it throws you off over here and you think, oh, okay, I think I found, this is the group that's most responsible for human evil, or this is the personality type that's most responsible for human evil. And then every time you investigate it, if you do it honestly, you find out, no, that's not the full answer either. And then you kind of, oh, well, maybe it's, aliens manipulating our genetics. And, you just keep on looking for answers so that you can avoid saying it's part of our nature. And in fact, it's part of nature. And, a good book to look at is called Dark Nature by a biologist named Lyle Watson. Mm-hmm. And he just goes into all these different examples of how nature or animals, creatures in the biosphere, how they behave in ways, some of which are, if they were to be brought into the human world, would be, serial killer stuff, just the most horrific types of relationship profiles going on in nature. If you look out in the natural world, it doesn't look like nature has a problem with evil, right? Mm-hmm. Nature doesn't have a problem with violence. Nature doesn't have a problem with all these things that we consider evil. And so then you start to go, okay, well, then you might answer, well, yeah, but we're not animals, you know, we're humans and we have these higher functions. We have the prefrontal cortex and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, we do, but that's built on top of this more ancient structuring. And if you look into our genetics, you know, you'll find there's reptile DNA in there. There's all kinds of primate DNA. There's all kinds of mammalian DNA in there. So we're kind of built on top of this, and we have this ability, you know, all these human capacities, psycho-spiritual capacities that are above and beyond animals, but we come into this simulation, so to speak, with all of those impulses back there, down there. Mm-hmm. And then that's kind of where we get into the subject of the shadow and how the shadow is part of the way that we create evil in the world.
Well said indeed. So yes, you want to start with the shadow since you kind of described it right now, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think what did the German idealist say, that nature is God's unconscious, but I'm sure nature has a shadow and you sort of described it. I don't think the cats and the gazelle are enjoying being eaten. I don't think the hawk wants to starve to death.
No.
And we humans come in to sort of the hermeticist to fix that. But yeah, you want to start with the shadow?
Because it's our consciousness that finds the problem with it, right?
Right.
Because the animals are not finding a problem with it. You could say, well, they're not conscious of it. But it's when we bring in consciousness, when we, it's this, what we call in psychology, Western psychology, this is the ego, right? This is our conscious mind. And the shadow is, the shadow is a term, it's Carl Jung's term. And, you know, it's developed on Freud's ideas, but advanced from there. The shadow is Jung's concept for anything that is in our psyche, in our mind, that is totally antithetical to the way we like to see ourselves, mm-hmm. to the way we want to present ourselves to the world. It's totally antithetical to moral values. This is, like we were saying, this is your primal nature. This is your primal violence and sexuality and control drives. And it's also all the leftovers from your personal and intergenerational trauma. So there's grief and guilt and all that stuff in there. There's envy and selfishness, all the stuff that, you know, is we would like to think that we are not, but they are part of our nature. And so our because of the way we're constructed, the ego naturally represses these drives, these impulses down into the unconscious. But then they have to be released. They grow there because you can't live completely at odds with your dark side. That's down there. That's part of your nature. Your psyche is trying to present it. Your body is trying to move it, but it can't come out because if it were to, you know, you'd be committing crimes and you'd be just destroying the world overtly. And so what ends up happening is the psyche has worked out this very kind of primitive way of dealing with our repressed darkness. And that's what's called projection. And so what we do is, because we can't take looking at our own darkness, we will definitely notice it in other people. And we will throw our own darkness, our own evil, as we see it, onto other people and say, you're the carrier of this. You're the selfish one. You're the violent one. You're the psychopath. You're the selfish one. You're the narcissist, right? And so we'll let another person or another group carry our own shadows for us. Mm-hmm. And then that gives us a rationale for why we can take action in the world to stop that other person or stop that other group or control that other group. And then when we actually take action in the world, that's how we physically displace this shadow energy into the world. And then we ourselves become the bringers of evil into the world. Mm-hmm. So you could say that the shadow is sort of the psychological correlate to social evil. And it's the, you could say it's the psychological cause of social evil.
That was really well said. And I the only thing I would add as Jungians have noted, the shadow is almost an evolutionary human defense mechanism, because as a kid, you immediately go there and you want to spill the water or grab the cake or whatever. And our parents are like, no, no, no. Immediately we're creating a shadow because we're repressing. Oh my God, I can't just grab the candy off of the table right when I feel like it. The problem, of course, he agrees that our society does not have those mechanisms later on to address the shadow that has helped us as children cope right with the world, the initiation, the therapy, the art, or understanding how art is supposed to be cathartic, all that. So that's exactly another right one. The other thing is that I don't think the shadow is not everything that's bad. For example, let's say it can be good things. Let's say, Colin, you were a kid and you're like, oh, I want to be a musician. And your parents are like, oh, that's sweet and everything. But you know, this is the real world. And you suddenly right started suppressing, oh, I'm not going to be a musician or anything like that. I'm going to go sell insurance or do something truly evil like politics or something like that. And you became an insurance salesman, but you've repressed that good thing, but it comes out bad. Like you might go to, every time you're at a nightclub with a live band, it's the only time you get in a fight with your girlfriend or a fist fight, or you become a music critic and you're always insulting people online who musicians because you're projecting your right frustration. You never were allowed to do your dream.
Right.
And of course, to fix it is to realize that and say, oh, I may sell insurance, but I'm going to start playing in a band on the weekends. So it can be something good that you've repressed. It's not always like trauma and all that.
Yeah. In Jungian psychology, there's the term the golden shadow. Oh, and yeah, so that's basically your gifts, your talents, like you're saying, that in anything that's creative and generative in you, but it can't come out, you know, for example, because of your family's culture or your community's culture, you know, being an artist, being a musician, that's kind of for kids. That's not what adults do. Or homosexuality or other sexual types of impulses and all kinds of stuff that isn't necessarily bad. It's bad in the context of your family, of your environment, but isn't objectively bad, but you have to hold it back. And then if you come in touch with that golden shadow material, that actually ends up being part of your genius and part of your reason for being and for living and finding meaning in life. So not everything that's in the shadow is objectively bad. It's just the shadow is just anything that for whatever reason, whether familial or cultural, or even at the human societal level. I mean, there is some stuff that all human beings agree is not good. It's not good to just, you know, grab somebody that you're angry at and kill them or rape them or whatever. And so, but that might be a primal impulse in you. So the shadow ranges from ancient primal impulses to, things that your family has helped push back or that your culture has pushed back. And so it's kind of just a reservoir for anything that can't make it into your life and into your mindset because it's at odds with your environment.
You know, it's like in the physical world, to have a shadow, you need light and you need an obstruction. So the light is the things that we love and we want and everything. And the obstructions are complexes and inhibitions and so forth that causes the shadow to be cast.
Very true.
Yep, that's sort of just a metaphysical truth about duality, right? Because that's kind of where this goes back to, is you go, okay, well, let's take it out of the human world. We can go into the biological world, like we were discussing earlier about destruction. And, you know, we have creation. And so then in this, for whatever reason, we're in this duality construct, right? And this you know, simulation is, at least part of it is based on this duality construct, the zero and the one, masculine and feminine, light and dark, and on and on and on. And so creation is, therefore destruction is. And so you kind of always kind of have to go back to that when you want to try to frame good and evil, and to see that there's no getting out of it. There's no ideology. There's no mindset. There's no meditation practice or anything like that, that while you're in this state of consciousness, that you're going to be able to avoid this sort of metaphysical duality.
Indeed, yeah. Very well said. Yeah, and I wanted to bring a visual so we can take a look, so the audience more or less sees better. This is there are many you can find on the internet. I used this recently in our Finding Hermes private group. And yeah, here's the structure of the psyche. Of course, Jung said all of these have to be dealt with for individuation. We have the persona at the top, dealing with the outer world, the mask we wear every day, our job, our family, our buddies. Then there's the ego, which is a complex, and it's a complex that's supposed to deal with reality. That's a personal consciousness. Then we go deeper, and that's where the shadow, the anima, and the animus reside. The shadow and the anima and animus are both part of the personal unconscious, but they're also archetypes too. And of course, like you said, Colin, they're collective in their power. So that's more or less for people to know what it is. Anything you want to add to that?
Well, I mean, the shadow, anything can be in the shadow, right? The shadow is really just the category. So you have the unconscious. So I mean, we can use this very simple, keep that on the screen though for a second. We can use this simple analogy of the an iceberg in the ocean, where the tip of the iceberg is above the water and the vast majority of the iceberg is below the water. So that's kind of how human consciousness is. We are aware, probably, we are consciously aware of some small percentage of all cognition. Maybe it's 5% or 7% or 10% or whatever it is. And then the rest of it is in the unconscious. And there is a continual ebb and flow of material coming from the unconscious into the conscious mind. So you need to recall a memory. It's in the unconscious. You say, oh yeah, what was that I did back then? Blah, boom. Well, the memory pops up. There it is. Or what's that? How do you spell that word? Or blah, blah, blah. Comes up. Or dreams, for example. Boop, comes right up. So there's a constant dynamic going on there. Now, the shadow is anything in the unconscious that could or should make its way into your consciousness. It really would be better for you if you were to be able to assimilate this. It wants to come up, but it can't, because it's being held back by cognitive dissonance. Because if it were to come up, it would ruin your view of yourself. Mm-hmm. It would ruin your plans. It could ruin the way other people see you. And so it's being actively repressed down into the unconscious. So that could really be anything. So like when we talk about complexes, Jungian complexes, and that's not on the map or whatever, but really anything that needs to come up. And if you start looking for it, like what you were talking about earlier in your example of how your shadow is always kind of sneaking out and showing you itself if you only had eyes to see. And so if you can understand that there's always shadow material down there, it's always presenting itself through, you know, it's giving you clues that I'm back here, I need to be seen, I need to be assimilated, but we don't generally have the general awareness that this is going on. And so we end up tripping over it, we end up projecting it, it ends up blowing up things in our lives. But that's actually when we come to know our shadow, is when you actually do have a trip up in life, and you do fall down, and you do have a little dark night of the soul, and you're laying there licking your wounds, and you're going, what the hell just happened? How did I create that? What did a part of me create that? If you will take that opportunity after your shadow gets a hold of you and trips you up and throws you down and wrecks you, if you will use that opportunity to start investigating yourself and what was back there that was unconscious all along, that you were denying all along, and now you could finally see it down, that when you're down in the dirt, that's when you could go, oh, okay. You know, I kind of did that to myself. Those were my impulses. That was my immaturity. Those were my drives. I unconsciously did that to myself. If you do the other thing, which is continue to blame other people or blame the world for why you're down in the dirt, then you never learn, you never assimilate your shadow, and then it stays back there and it'll just come get you on the next round.
That's indeed very well. Yeah, we want to get to some, we will definitely get to some techniques on shadow work, but I definitely mean, you nailed it right there. We'll deal with that at the end of the interview. And yes, sorry guys, if you're online bitching about Trump or Kamala Harris, you're probably projecting your shadow, or at least creating a scapegoat, because sometimes we put our shadows on something and we want the sacrifice. Sorry, that's the truth. As Jung said, The rise of the self is always the defeat of the ego. It's like you said, it seems humiliating. We've lost it all. How are we going to show our face to ourselves and into the mirror? But the transformation really begins. And yeah, I wanted to just put this real quickly because this agrees with us. Jung, as Robin Robertson said, the shadow seems to represent everything we regard as vile and despicable, everything which we deny and avoid. Yeah, we're talking Trump and Kamala Harris, depending on where you're coming from. Same sort, same bullshit. So a desire for too much light, too much spirituality creates darkness and instinctuality. And yes, Jung did say the bigger the light, the bigger the shadow. I've written this bio on Elvis and Bowie and those two great light of the world, but then it casts a huge shadow, and everything casts a shadow. Every religion, movement, ideology, there's the dark side. And then Anne Casement very well said, is a shadow is everything I don't know about myself and don't want to know. You just don't want to know. So it's not, oh, I'm a Taurus and I like, you know, pina coladas and getting caught in the rain. It's the part of you don't want to face, but it's there. And if you don't, not just projection, right, Colin, but it will make your body sick. You want to, most of diseases is stopping our shadow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But two things there. Yes, it'll make you sick. Definitely, it'll make you sick. And I think when we talk about Ken Wilber's four quadrants, that's when we'll go into how that works. But I think I forgot what I was going to say.
Yeah, so, I was talking about shadow, light.
The Trump is what it was. Trump and Harris, projection. Or Trump and Biden, or whoever it is.
It can be anybody, our boss, our spouses. You know what I mean? Damn football.
Whoever you're demonizing.
Yeah, my team scapegoating on Sundays.
It's actually not Trump or Biden or Harris or whoever that's in your shadow. It's some trait about Trump. Trump is perfect. That's the perfect. And it was Charles Eisenstein, I think that wrote an article recently where he was talking about how perfect it is that Trump is the Trump card. which is like the Joker, or it's the card that can be used for as a substitute for anything else. Yeah. You can project whatever you want to onto him, and he will reflect back whatever it is that you project onto him. So, but I think all of these political figures who stand in the place of the archetypal royal, the archetypal king or queen, which is really the parent, the archetypal parent, it, you know, that position, when they come on into that position, they make themselves a target for everything that we have, that's discordant, in us in relation to that archetype or in relation to those traits. So for example, if you can't stand how rude Trump is and he's just, you know, just says whatever he wants to say and he's so uncouth and rude, well, maybe that's because he's willing to act in a way that you would say is antisocial, but that you would like to do at the office. You would like it if you had the courage to actually just tell it like it is in front of your family on Thanksgiving or in the office. And so that weakness is in your shadow. You're holding that back. And so when you see somebody else doing that, then that pisses you off, or whatever attribute, you know, he's, you know, this is sort of the archetypal masculine kind of thing. So your relationship to the male archetype and to masculine qualities, how you relate to that internally based on a lot of how you grew up and your relationship to your own father and men in your life. If you have a bad relationship to certain masculine properties, and then you see those in Trump, you're going to get mad. It's going to trigger you. And the same thing goes for the feminine, or same thing goes for anything it is that you're finding in these other characters that are out there that really triggers you and ticks you off. That's because it's triggering some part of you that's in your shadow, where there's discordance in you. There's some kind of fracture. There's some kind of relationship problem that you have with that trait that pertains to you and your problems and what you need to work out. And so you can use triggering as a doorway into what you need to work on in your own life, in your own inner work. So it's difficult because when you get triggered, you get activated and your psyche wants to dump energy out, wants to project it onto that other person or displace it through some kind of activity. And so you get caught up in the energy of it. And it's difficult to say, okay, while your heart's racing, I'm projecting, what is it about this person that I'm really not liking? Let me go back and find that in myself. Let me trace that back to my childhood. How is Trump kind of like my dad? Or how is, you know, whatever feminist or whatever, you know, actually, you know, beautiful women or whatever it is that's triggering you. It's different for everybody. Depends on who they are, their personality, how they were raised, all that. But use that to go trace it back into yourself and start to analyze it and go, okay, that's what that is. All right, I have a little bit of Trump or so-and-so in me, and I need to get in touch with that, and how can I do that? And it's easier with a therapist, I mean, or a partner, somebody who can reflect that for you than it is doing it alone. But eventually you get to be able to do it by yourself as well.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Perfectly said. Yeah. And yeah, you gave some of the cures, observation, all the things you talked about. And for sure. And for the audience, we got a good crowd, over 100 people right now watching. And we usually peak at the end of the hour. So if you have any questions or you want to project your shadow on me, Colin or Vance, please super chat them. We'll take it. We have no worries. But please do that. Where do you want to go next? Because again, there's a lot of pieces going on. Do you want to talk about the Archons, or do you want to go into complexes? Complexes as essential. I mean, the shadow is a complex within us, but it's also it's a pretty hard topic, if you know what I mean. I don't know if we want to tackle that. I have a whole thing I wrote about it, but can go Archons.
I would say, okay, so Archons. How do we want to? Okay, Archons are. I mean, do you want to? I mean, first we have to kind of start with Archons. All right, okay, Gnostic Archons, like historical Gnostic Archons, and when you go back to the Gnostic myth or myths and mindset, you know, these are people who are struggling philosophically, metaphysically with a lot of the stuff that we're talking about right now. And they didn't have, they didn't have the psychology as we have, or genetics, or the kinds of things that we've learned since then. And so they're working with the analogies and understandings that they had at the time. And they're trying to, you know, that's a mythic mindset where you are trying to understand the world through the building blocks of myth, and that you have inherited from your culture. So you have, you know, in those times of late antiquity, you know, you have the building blocks of Greek mythology and Roman mythology, and you have the Eastern influences and the Jewish influences and all of this. And they're trying to make a worldview out of these kinds of building blocks. They're not using a scientific, rational construction set there. So, you know, Archons could be seen as, obviously they're trickster entities that are basically tripping you up or trying to control you or trying to parasite off of your energy. And so they represent something in the consciousness of mankind that is doing that. There's some kind of parasitic element in human consciousness, and they're standing in for that and representing that. And so then you go, well, now let's come into the modern time right now and go, well, how would we see that now?
Lizard and people.
Right? Go ahead, Miguel. Go ahead.
Lizard people.
Lizard.
Going straight to the extraterrestrial. I'm just going to go straight.
It's a continuation on of the same kind of mythologizing and projecting out with a mythic construction set. Okay, here's an entity that is controlling that self-destructive parasitic phenomenon that I'm finding going on. You're looking around in the world and you're saying, why are people such sheep? Why are they destroying themselves when it's so obvious what's going on here? Why am I destroying myself? Mm-hmm. How come I'm being taken over by internal forces that, you know, when I get triggered or whatever, what is possessing me? The understanding of possession, right? And that goes back to indigenous people, you know, many, you know, thousands of years before even Gnostics. There's an understanding of possession and spirit possession. So there's always, every group has some kind of understanding that there's something destructive, something parasitic, something evil that's either in me or outside of me that's causing me to do things that I don't want to do. And right, that's always there, right? Everybody has that. It's the djinn, or it's the archons, or it's the devil, it's Satan, or it's you know, whatever version your tradition has. And if you look at all of those different versions of that devil, demon, antichrist type archetype in all of the different mythic traditions, all you have to do is recognize this is metaphor, and you can derive a lot of deep truths out of that. So it's definitely helpful to look at these mythic understandings and to interpret them and go, oh, okay, yeah, I can see that is working that way. But we're modern people, and we have this scientific kind of layer. And so we have to, we don't have to, but people like us probably want to incorporate or want to integrate those prior understandings into something modern. And so that's where something like Jungian psychology can come in, and other forms of psychology can come in and kind of patch that together. And so that's where, if you're into Jung, you know, that's where you get into an autonomous complex. Or now we have IFS therapy, internal family systems therapy, and you have what they call parts. And there's a special part called the unattached burden, and that's in there. Or you have... I just lost my thought. I had one other example that I was going to... Oh, you have Wetiko, obviously, right? And so you have... I think that's the one I was going to use. So you have these new understandings of these, you know, Sri Aurobindo's hostile forces. You have these new understandings of these demonic, let's just say, entities that are destroying us or parasiting us. And then now with the whole red pill culture and all that stuff, you mentioned David Icke's reptilians, but now we have the New World Order, and we have, you know, every other new version of conspiracy theory. Not to say that there isn't something actually to all of that, and actually material to a lot of these conspiracies, there is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they are new ways for us to continually create some kind of mythic representation to deal with the fact that there are unseen forces that are destructive to us that we can't seem to get a hold of. And I always kind of tend to go back to the Jungian understanding, because it kind of really kind of mixes, it kind of melds the Gnostic, the Christian, and the scientific viewpoint all together, and kind of gives you a nice, well-rounded package there.
Yeah, well said indeed. Yeah, and of course, we all need that mythic boundary. That's why Jung left Freud, because Freud didn't want the myth. And Jung said it was just this, he wanted his own myth. And of course, he went down red pill experience. Then later he was like, oh my God, that was very Gnostic. I'm just like the, it was all about the Gnostics and the mythology, yeah, and all that. So, and you brought here Wetiko. I think I do have from Paul Levy himself. And he says, Wetiko is a cannibalizing force, insatiable greed, appetite without satisfaction, consumption as an end in itself, and war for its own sake against tribes, species, and nature, and even against individuals' own humanity. Wetiko is powerless to control our nature, but it can manipulate this false identity that it sets up within us. So
right.
From a young one, we have a shadow possession and a complex possession. But as Paul says, it can be as above, so below, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Paul's a Jungian.
Yeah. But these forces can be cosmic, mythological, and also within our heads.
Yeah, Paul is extremely prolific and poetic about his descriptions of quote-unquote Wetika, which I would say is a view of the interpersonal energetic ebb and flow of the human shadow, right? It is because everything that Wetika in this understanding, if you know this understanding, everything that Wetika compels you to do is some aspect of our natural constitution. It is some primal aspect. It is something that's in us and that we see being represented by people all around us all the time. It's sort of a possession phenomenon. And it's like you can look, like if you go to the, we'll go to the Ken Wilber thing later, but if you look at it in these different viewpoints, you have the personal shadow, and that's just your repressed darkness. But then when your personal shadow gets involved with other people's shadow, and then you get group collective shadow energetics, right? This is Jung's collective shadow. This is Matthias Desmet's mass formation. And when you get into the interpersonal relational view of the movement of the human shadow, now you can start to describe it in these adjectives, in these terms that Paul uses when he describes Wetika. And, you know, Paul will tell you that this is the shadow he's talking about. This is Jung's shadow. It's not anything different. It's just it's an alternate way of putting a lens on it and saying, hey, look at this. This is what I'm seeing through this interpersonal relational field. Because last thing on that is that I really like Dr. Dan Siegel's definition of the mind or the psyche. And it is, in his words, an embodied and relational field of energy and information. The mind is an embodied and relational field of energy and information. So when everybody's carrying around a repressed shadow and you have an interrelational field of energy and information, now you have this movement of this dark primal stuff, and the psyche is alive. It's a living ecosystem. So Wetika, or the collective shadow, is a living ecosystem of self-destructive, parasitic, it's a possession force, you know what I'm saying? So that's how I interface this understanding with Paul Levy's, with kind of patch it together there with Jung.
Yeah, like a black hole of the psyche, right? Just sucks everything into it.
Yeah,
but there's nothing going on in the black hole, whereas the shadow is actually not an empty place. It's just a place that's walled off from consciousness, right? So it's, you know, it's the closet, it's the basement, right? It's the place where we're throwing and pushing back all of these primal dark parts of ourselves that you see going on in nature that are also trying to go on in us, but we're pushing it back there. And this is why we periodically collectivize around ideals and ideologies, and we create these giant, you know, conflagrations, these big genocidal revolutions and all of that stuff to purge all of this shadow material that we're all holding back.
Yeah, and you brought up mass formation again. Yeah, I got this from Matthias Desmet's book, and he's quoting Gustave Le Bon. Mass formation is in essence a kind of group hypnosis that destroys individuals' ethical self-awareness and robs them of their ability to think critically. And then for those of you, then these are the steps for mass formation. Let's see, do I have it here?
Oh, the five steps?
Yeah, first is the first is general, generalized loneliness, social isolation, and lack of social bonds among the population. Here we are, check that. This deterioration of social connectedness leads to the second one, lack of meaning in life. Check that today. The third condition is the widespread presence of free-floating anxiety and psychological unease within a population. That's 2024. Check that. And the fourth condition is, from the first three, a lot of free-floating frustration and aggression. And again, that's, you know, the part where we are projecting our shadow and we're throwing it, and then suddenly the population just like that becomes, as you were saying, it becomes hypnotized in this mass psyche, and the shadow takes over. And then we have, genocide, mass war, and all that good stuff. So,
and the only thing that stops it is awareness. Mm-hmm. Yes. Awareness, right? When we go, oh, hey, wait a minute, what are we doing here? How are we unconsciously participating in this? And Desmet talks a lot about the need to stay during these phases of mass hypnosis. This is Jung's collective shadow, that to stay an individual, to stay a free thinker, to constantly challenge everything that the group is saying and holding as true, and to constantly be reevaluating everything for yourself and helping other people wake up and say, hey, wait a minute, are you really evaluating this for yourself, or are you just taking what other people are telling you as true and waking up other people? And I actually think that the whole phenomenon with the internet and all of everybody passing around all this information about, you know, all this conspiratorial stuff is actually a function of the collective consciousness of mankind waking up. That's all that conspiracy stuff and red pill stuff. That's all the human shadow. That's us collectively saying, hey, look, let's look at our shadow. And the first step is, because it's easier, is to say, hey, look at Bill Gates, you know, or say, look at the Rothschilds, or look at Klaus Schwab, or whatever, or this ideology or that ideology. You know, you weren't aware of it before, so it's great you saw that. And these people are, you know, psychotics, or they are, let's say, cluster B personality types, dark triad personality types. Yeah. And so, you know, it's legitimate to single them out, but that's just the first step, right? So I think that's a tremendous, huge step that wasn't going on in World War II or whenever the last one of these was in our civilization. And now that is going on now. And you can see that the collective forces, all these unconscious people in power, are trying to shut that down. And they're trying to say, no, 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 don't look at these things. Just listen to what we're telling you. And so, but we're pushing back on that and saying, no, now you can't, you know, Pandora's box is open. You can't put it back in now. Sorry, we see you. We see these shadow phenomenon. Now, the next step is when you start doing personal shadow work and you start going, oh, okay, well, how, I mean, that's large scale stuff, you know, what Gates is doing or whatever. Let's bring it down to you and your family, what you're doing in your own household, what you're doing at work, what you're doing when you're driving on the road. That's the next step.
Very well said indeed. Yes, I would certainly agree. I want to a little housekeeping, and then I want to bring in Vance if he has thoughts or questions, or if the audience has any questions. But I wanted to mention, make the announcement, in case you didn't know, that Astrognosis 3 is now out for streaming. And it's very cool because I am also offering... Also, can you guys see it? Can you see it, Vance, or am I?
Yeah, I can see it.
Okay.
Yeah, can see it. It's here.
Okay, good. Yeah. With the new computer, I'm still getting used to things. But Astrognosis 3 now has I'm including Astronosis 1 and 2, so you will get the entire lineup. Really well done video at the, from the Theosophical Society crew, because that's where we had it. And you will have more than 18 hours of amazing conversations on Sophia and simulated realities from Richard Smoley, Mitch Horowitz, Chris Knoll, Steven Snyder, myself, David Block, James True. So all there. And then for no cost, you will also get, yes, the Archons. Speaking of the Archons, you'll get last year's Astronosis, where we spent more than, well, the total with panels, about 15 hours on under decoding the Archons. And again, great speakers from April DeConnick, Sarah Elkaldi. Others came back, like Mitch Horowitz and Richard Smoley. And lastly, for one price, you'll get Astronosis 1. And that's the first Astronosis we did in the Bahamas. And that's Gnosticism and Star Portals. So get it now while we have it. It's, again, one price. You get about 30 hours of high-octane content. So wanted to mention that. And the other thing, too, is just to mention next week, we got a lot of shows. I'm going to give like four podcasts because, again, with Astronosis and all this disruptions I had recently scheduling, but they're great shows. We're having shows on the Cathars, Christian mysticism. David Block's going to come back with his new trilogy, a show on Jung and more Jung and the divine feminine. So great stuff. And hope to see you there, too. And yeah. And apologize for those of you who've asked for like a traditional podcast with my intros and everything. Everything's been disrupted in the last month. And I hope to get back on my feet sometime in October. Again, Astronosis was big. I had the last edits for the Elvis book to turn in, and that's a positive thing, but it was a lot of work. And kudos to the team at Inner Traditions. Again, as you know, my PC died, so did my backup, so I'm catching up. I had a family loss, stolen credit card, whole bunch of stuff, life on life's terms that hit me in August and early September. So I hope to get back, but I'm glad you guys are still here. Please support, one-time donations, Petro, anything you can do really helps, or get Astronosis 3. So wanted to make that little announcement, housekeeping, before we hit an hour. And now, Vance, what do you questions or remarks? What do you think so far?
Well, I think
I have to let the cat out. She needs to go out, so I'll be right back. Make sure there's no Haitians out there, too, when I take her out.
Watch out for the cat shadows.
I had to say the joke. Sorry. I will be right back. But Vance, take over.
Sure. Yeah, you know, I was wondering, let's shift that a little bit before Miguel comes back. And I was wondering, what is your opinion on what Jung thought about the general greater universe? I mean, it seems to me that he didn't really limit himself to just, you know, obvious physical realities, you know, what we can see here, touch and all that, and social interactions. I think he might have had suspicions about the greater world, you know, that, for example, that he accessed in his active imagination exercises. So what do you think Jung thought about, like, God, angels, demons, archons? What was Jung's take on that?
He kind of always kept an open mind and always said, I don't know, right? That was always there, which is perfect place to start. He also, his father was a local pastor, and he was brought up as a Christian. And although he sort of became a Gnostic kind of mystic later, he still held the Christian. He didn't totally throw away the Christian view of God or the Trinity. He thought that there was archetypal truths in there. He just reformulated things for himself in a psychological way. He would always try to throw a psychological lens onto everything and understand that everything is projection. Everything, all beliefs, the way we make the world, the way we build the world, all culture, everything is a projection of the human psyche. And behind that projection are natural patterns that he called archetypes, that are living patterns of nature and of humanity, that are always imposing themselves upon our psyche and influencing our perception and projections. And so, I mean, he was really, he had personal mystical experiences, and you could kind of, you know, you could call him a shaman. And so he kind of had a shamanistic view. He had a Gnostic view, you could say, with little g Gnostic, maybe an alchemical view. He was studying the whole Western esoteric tradition very deeply. And so Neoplatonic ideas are in there.
Yeah.
And right. And he was interested in physics and metaphysics, and he's just an explorer. He's just, a psychonaut. Right. And so, I mean, there's that famous, part of that interview he did with BBC in 1959, there's a colorized version of that out now, which is really cool, where the interviewer asked him, well, do you believe in God? And he said, I don't have to believe, I know. So that's, that's kind of some information there to answer your question, as far as what I know about. I mean, you can spend a lifetime studying Jung and reading other Jungians and the original Jungians, you know, the group of people that were around him during his life. There's another generation or two after that where people are sort of digging into his stuff to try to understand his view on things that he wasn't so explicit on. But then they also have the Red Book, which he never planned to really release. And that's very mystical and personal. And so you can look at the Red Book to kind of see his wider, more mystical way of seeing things and his sort of own shamanic journeying and all of that. So, yeah, he's very wide and broad and very, very deep.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I would disagree about the small g. I think it's the big g. Because
you think he's a big g Gnostic?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's no, I mean, again, what he told Barbara Hanna, his colleague, after his Red Book, his experience, his psychotic or whatever you want to call it, underworld, uh-huh. He said, this is parallels the Gnostic experience, and they are the foundation of what I'm trying to get to. And that came with the, you know, the personality types and all that. And he said that was the well font, was this Gnostic. And secretly, the more you said, he was always going back to the Gnostics. And of course, Jung said, hey, shining crazy diamonds, please subscribe for the second part of this interview. It certainly helps grow this Red Pill cafeteria. What's more, beyond getting the second half, you get content earlier and don't have to worry about flapdoodle commercials here or on other public platforms. So please become a Red Circle sub, Patreon, or AB Prime member for the full consciousness expanding gnosis. At Patreon, I have tiers as low as $1 or $3 a month. And at Red Circle, it's a clean $4.99 a month to stream all full shows. All subs include a dedicated private stream that works on most apps. Don't forget the Gnostic Tarot, which is selling well and optimizing spiritual growth based on the feedback I've gotten, and the Virtual Alexandria Academy. I can't do it without you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self, here in the desert of the real. Hello and goodbye, as always.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.